Tommy Nelson continues his study on the Song of Solomon. This session is titled The Art of Dating. It's important to understand the context of this message, so at this time, we suggest you stop the tape and take a moment to read Chapter 1, verses 8 through 17, and Chapter 2, verses 1 through 7.
All right. Are you with me? I wish somebody had told me this. Look at verse 8. Women, should you pursue a guy like this? Look at verse 8. The women, daughters of Jerusalem, if you yourselves don't know, most beautiful among women, go forth on the trail of the flock and pasture your young goats by the herds, tents of the shepherds. Meaning, follow him. This guy is worthy to be chased. Can a girl set up a meeting with a guy and let herself be seen? She did it. You know how I met my wife? Playing touch football. That's where I fell in love. I was playing on the back here. She comes across the middle of McKenna Park in Denton, Texas, twisted her ankle, falls down. And I came over to help her. I helped her up, took her to the sidelines, and her eyes were kind of puddled up. And she looked at me, and I looked at her. And after the game, I said, how's that ankle feel there, Teresa? Oh, pretty good. She was dating this guy with Campus Crusade. My wife was cold. This guy said to her, Teresa, can I give you a ride? She said, no. I gave her a ride. I took her home. She put some hot chocolate on. We sat there for about 2 hours, and we talked. And I said, what a neat girl. If I never spend another day with this girl, this is a marvelous person. And she has gotten sweeter and sweeter. It's been 20 years, two kids. Both of us have gone down a whole lot the way we used to look, but do you know what? She is etched with a certain character. And by God's grace, if we keep doing it right, we're going to go a long time. And that's the testimony of any Christian couple. How about dating? Don't you love dating? Had a woman go through a divorce once. She sat in my study and cried. I said, sister, I'm being the compassionate pastor. Lots of people go through a divorce. I don't care about the divorce. I just don't want to date again. Watch this. In dating, three things are desperately needed. And this is the wonder about this book. It doesn't go that deep, but it just goes wonderfully simple. You have to have three things. You have to have time, where you just have you don't have any strings attached, where you just spend time with a person. And you don't spend time in a place that makes provision for the flesh. Guy says to me, we went out to the park at night, got in the back seat, and got tempted. Well, of course you did. If you didn't, you got a problem. Romans 13, make no provision for the what? For the flesh in regard to its lust. Don't give your body a chance. Francis of Assisi called his body brother ass, because it will not do what you want it to do. Serve God, body. No, we ain't doing it. Squat down. You can't trust your body. So this couple is going to spend time, and if you look in verse 12, they eat together. If you look in verse 17 and 16, they have a picnic. They got a date. And they're out in the open enjoying each other. So you spend time with no strings attached. The next thing you do in a relationship, in dating, is that you cultivate respect. You cultivate respect. Fellas, let me tell you how to get a girl. The greatest sex organ on a woman is her mind. And when she respects a man and regards him highly, respect and romance are cousins. You can't love somebody you don't like. You ever seen that old Jimmy Stewart movie? Guy asks Jimmy Stewart, can I marry your daughter? He says, do you like her? Yes, sir, I love her. No, I didn't want to know that. Do you like her? That's key. And so this couple has time, and they're going to cultivate a friendship. Now watch how it happens. Verse 9, you want to put down how to cultivate something. Put down the word regard. Look how they regard each other. Fellas, verse 9, what do you say to a girl that you want to win her heart? Look how he sees her. Verse 9, to me, my darling, you are like my mare among the chariots of Pharaoh. I probably ought to explain that because that can get you in trouble. A mare was among the chariots of Pharaoh. This is a white steed that led all of his army. It was the most precious thing that was in Egypt. This horse was nigh unto a deity. We have a lot of horses in the North Texas area, and you've got these great big critters on these four little pins, and you have to treat them with tenderness. When this man calls her the mare of the chariots of Pharaoh, he says, you are without monetary value. You're beyond value. You are infinite in how I see you. Girls, I had a woman say to me once in the middle of a bad marriage, she said, I don't want my husband to be romantic. I want him to be civil. She said, I'll never forget it, I wish he would treat me like a Denny's waitress. And I thought she's kidding. And she was serious as cancer. She said, no. She said, I wish he would treat me like a Denny's waitress. He's so kind to Denny's waitresses. This guy says, you're the most wonderful thing in the world. That's how he sees her. And she says of him in verse 12, while the king was at his table, they're eating, my perfume gave forth its fragrance. My beloved is to me a pouch of myrrh, which lies all night between my breasts. Let me tell you what that means. Women, the most precious thing to a woman was a pouch of perfume that gave them their fragrance. Myrrh was a very expensive aromatic rosin. And when she says, I'm at the table eating with this man, and my perfume gives forth its fragrance, do you see who the perfume is? It's my beloved. He's to me my pouch of myrrh that lies all night between my breasts. Simply means that she dreams of him. She thinks of him. You are my mare. You are my myrrh. That's how you regard each other. Look at verse 15. This is how you respect each other. You go from regarding to respecting. How beautiful you are, my darling. How beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves. When you see a dove, you're gentle toward it. You want to reach out and hold it. You want to treat it tenderly. He looks at her beauty, but it's a deeper beauty. It's what Peter called the precious quality of a quiet, gentle spirit that is expensive, literally, in the sight of God. He says, I respect you so much. Verse 16, she says, how handsome you are, my beloved. And do you see that word, fellas? It's the word pleasant. That's the same word used by how David felt about Jonathan, his best friend. You're my best buddy. Make an axiomatic statement right here about marriage. Marry your best pal. Your best bud. Your best partner. If your mate can't be your friend, then you don't want him as your mate. He regards her, she regards him. He respects her, she respects him. And she says, you are so pleasant. What that simply means is, and if you look at the next verse, it just tells you what pleasant means. Verse 17, she says, our couch in 16b is luxuriant. The beams of our houses are cedars and our rafters cypresses. The interpretation is apparently this. They're out in the open having a picnic. There are cypresses and cedars, and she calls it a couch and a mansion. What this means is the man is so pleasant. The man is so nice. The man is so tactful. The man is so respectful. He is so such a good listener that she says, when I am with you, I'm a millionaire. I'm a queen. And all I need is you just being with you. Girls, that's how you should feel to the guy that you marry. You notice, fellas, we hadn't laid a glove on her yet. We hadn't touched her. We hadn't kissed her. And she says, I'm a millionaire out in the open. All I need is you. Our couch is luxurious. Because you are so pleasant. That means you're able to listen to a girl. And fellas, let me tell you a taboo that we do. Guys can be real romantic with the girl they want to get because a guy's a competitor. And he will get a girl and be romantic. He'll send her a flower every day for a year. And then once they get married, she won't get a flower till she's 60. Because a man tends to conquer the woman, mount her on the wall, and then use her to do the cooking and the bear his progeny while he goes off and pursues his ambitions. You don't do that. You continually regard and respect and love your wife. You listen to her. You weigh your words. You apologize quickly. Never win an argument. I'm 0 in 1,000. And that has kept my marriage together. This video will not reach my wife, incidentally. One of the terms of the contract. Now, are you with me? I got about 10 minutes. I want to show you what happens when you have the right time and you cultivate a relationship. When you regard and respect each other, I want to show you what happens to you. Chapter 2, verse 1. Ladies, she's speaking. Girls, look at what she says about herself in 2:1. I am the rose of Sharon, the lily of the valleys. They're both singular nouns. Roses and lilies do not grow in clumps. They are singular. She says, I'm the most special woman on the face of the earth. Guys, in chapter 1, what did she feel about herself? Don't stare at me because I'm not that pretty. My skin is sunburned. Now what does she say about herself? I am beautiful. Why? Because this fellow treated her so lofty. Let me tell you what happened one time. I counseled with a couple, and this guy would berate this woman. He would move her to anger and mock her for not having the education he had. What she did was she cut him off sexually, and you couldn't blame her. Who wants to give herself to some disrespectful pig like this guy had become to her? He would berate her. He wouldn't listen to her. He would demean her. This woman visited our church, and this woman was so incredibly beautiful. Physically, she was about 5'10". She had long blonde hair, and she was a dead ringer for Linda Evans. She was so beautiful that I was self-conscious talking to her by myself. Because people coming by going, Pastor knows. They can't imagine somebody, you know, like David Letterman here talking to this gorgeous woman. And yet she wouldn't let me introduce her because she felt so dumb and so ugly. And it wasn't my place. But I wanted to look at her and say, you are an incredibly lovely, sensitive, beautiful woman. And to be very honest, she was just made to order for an affair. Because the devil will find somebody to tell your wife, if you won't, that she's special. This woman's esteem goes up. Verse 2, because this guy says, like a lily among the thorns is my darling among the maidens, which translated means every woman in the world is hands off. You are the singular, most glorified, wonderful woman in all the universe. You think that makes a woman's heart beat? When a man tells her that? Verse 3, not only does her view of herself go up, but look what she thinks of this man. Fellas, you want a girl to admire you? Treat her like a singular queen. Verse 3, like an apple tree among the trees of the forest. So is my beloved among the young men. Meaning every other guy does not meet any need that I have. You're all that I need. Verse 3b, in his shade I took great delight and sat down. His fruit was sweet to my taste. Shade means that he could protect her, that she could come underneath his wing. The New Testament puts it like this, that the man should nourish and cherish his wife as he does his own body and as Christ does the church. That means that my wife can never be afraid to get close to me because she's never afraid to get close because she knows I'll never hurt her, I'll never demean her. I'll never treat her in a hard way. She can submit to me is the most logical thing in the world because I'm the guy that will die for her. In his shade I took delight and I rested. His fruit was sweet to my taste, meaning to nourish her.
What this means, guys, is that if you want to go to my wife and say, Miss Nelson, Teresa, you are incredibly lovely. That's okay, because I told her that this morning. Oh, yeah. I sat right there at the breakfast table, and I looked in her big green eyes, and I said, you have a delicate beauty. And I said, you know, you're as pretty as the day that I married you. Oh, go on. Yes, you are. Oh, no, yes, I am. What do you want? Nothing. You can go to my wife and say, you're such a wonderful housekeeper. I told her that. You can say, you're a marvelous mother, Miss Nelson. I told her that. You can say, you got great legs. I'll take you out, pal, because that's as far as we're going.
Some things are for me. I can say that, nobody else.
He provides for her. He protects her. Fellas, look at verse 4. He's brought me to his banquet hall. That's an open place, a public place. We're not now having a picnic. We've gone to Luby's. We've gone to Furs. We're gone to Wyatt's, all right? He's brought me to a banquet hall in a public place, and his banner over me is love. Let me tell you what that means. Generals on the field would identify their troops by a banner. God is called Jehovah, our banner, that you fight under him. He owns you. It's the idea that a general owned his troops by putting up a banner. Solomon owned this woman, and she willingly gave herself. Do you know what his mark of ownership was? Love. What it means is that you could go into a public place and you could look at how this man treated this woman. And he treated her openly. He pulled the chair out. He sat down with her. Fellas, never walk in front of your wife. Write that down. Never walk in front of your wife. You walk with her. This is not your little coolie that follows you around and brings you water. You walk with her. And you pull the chair out and you open the door. This is your singular rose. This is your singular lily. When you meet somebody, you say, how do you do? I'm Tom, my wife, Teresa, right here. When you have kids, the first time your child mouths off at that woman, you take him out. Never, ever let your child challenge your wife. Don't you make your wife mess with him. You mess with him. Bill Cosby said to his kid on the show, I brought you into this world, and I can take you out. You protect your wife. What am I talking about? Oh, yeah. You see my point? You treat her like a queen. My wife corrected me about this early on. I grew up in a family with three brothers. I never had a woman in my house. I have two sons. Never had a daughter in my house. I had a dog named Johnny. I had two dogs when we got married called Rotor and Rooter. Not female dogs. We had male everything. And I wasn't really used to how to working one of these female creatures right here. And I had a habit that my wife broke me of in about 5 seconds. That when I would talk to some guy or whatever, I had my wife right here. I was married, you know. But all of a sudden, I'm into my single mode when I'm talking to somebody. And you know what I would do very subtly? Teresa would be standing here, and I'd be talking to you, and I'd do this. I'd move in between you and her. And I'd cut her out. And it was because this is my terrain. It's my domain. And she informed me. That you do not do that. Listen, guys, don't fall into that. Are you seeing what's growing? Her love of her self-esteem and her love of this man grow because he provides, he protects, he promotes this girl. Now watch what else grows. Verse 5. Sustain me with raisin cakes because I am lovesick. Refresh me with apples. You know what a raisin cake was? They were considered by the Jews to be aphrodisiacs, because they were full of seeds. They were used in heathen worship. The book of Hosea holds Israel with contempt for following after other gods with raisin cakes. In the book of 2 Samuel, David brings the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem and establishes the kingdom. And he calls all of Jerusalem together and blesses them and sends them home to be with their families and distributes, and I quote, to each of them, raisin cakes. Do you know why? Because the kingdom was enthroned, righteousness was established, and David expected the Mosaic covenant when Israel was obedient to go into effect, the Abrahamic covenant to go into effect. They were to be like sand of the sea, and he sent them home to be fruitful and multiply. He gave them raisin cakes. This, girls, is a sensuous statement. This woman says, he provides for me, he promotes me, he protects me. I admire him. I love him. I feel so good because he treats me this way. Sustain me with raisin cakes. I'm lovesick. That is a passionate verse. What that means is, I want him. Verse 6. Let his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. What position is that? Let his left hand not be around my head, be under my head, and his right hand embrace me. That is the sexual position. This book is used by one Christian doctor as to the technique of foreplay in marriage. You cradle your wife and you fondle her. See also Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 6. What does that verse mean? I love to teach this to little old ladies. What do you think that means, ladies? I really don't know. I'll tell you what it means. Incidentally, let me do a little preaching right here. This is why it's so hard to find a commentary on the Song of Solomon, because we all think that God is so mystic and the holy other that he doesn't know what passion is. Where do you think we got passion from and desire from? We got it from God. We think sometimes, we say, God, help me deal with my lust. You're what? Well, help me. What's lust? No, he knows what it is. And that's why the book is so often taught in allegory as Christ to the church, because we can't imagine this being real. As a matter of fact, in the early centuries of the Christian church, the Jews got together and they had a council as to what was and what was not their books, as you saw gathering New Testament books. And one of the books they had a problem with canonizing was Ecclesiastes, because of the occasional use of sarcasm, and the Song of Solomon, because the book was so passionate. Jewish boys were not permitted to read this until they were older, because it would stir the passions, and it does. Now, don't look at the verse. This woman says, because of how you treat me, I esteem myself, I love you because of your protection, provision, your promotion of me. I want you. I want your left hand under my head. I want to be one with you. What do you think the next verse will say? Don't look. Do you think God will speak and say, foul woman, nursing these loathsome feelings? And Solomon took her hints and whomped her. You think it'll say that? This woman wants him. Look at what the next verse says. Solomon says, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field. In the book of Proverbs, Solomon refers to your wife as you are to love her like a graceful doe and a loving hind. Let her breast satisfy you at all times. He speaks of this woman in the highest of gentle terms as a brown-eyed doe that you move so tenderly with. And he speaks to his harem for their aid. And he says, I adjure you by the gracefulness of this woman. Look at the rest of the verse. Don't arouse or awaken. And the word love there is in the neuter, love until it pleases. Solomon is saying, sweetheart, that feeling that you feel is good, but it's waiting to be awakened on a later day. Not yet. And fellas, the guy takes the initiative. That woman is geared to give herself. I asked my wife one time, we kept ourselves pure with each other going into our marriage. And I said to her, Teresa, if I had pressed it, would you have gone to bed with me? And she looked at me. She said, no, but maybe. I said, really? She said, I wanted you. I loved you. You know, sticking this thing on your finger doesn't kick your sex drive in gear. You want that person. And Solomon says it's good, but it's not yet. What grows in marriage? Her admiration of her, of him, and her restraint grows. There's three things needed in a dating relationship: time, cultivation, and restraint. Because when you spend time regarding and respecting a person, the natural phenomena of romance is to give yourself. That's the way we're made. And you got to shut it down. You got to take care of it. Give you a good example of this. How many of you set fires in your living room? You don't? Let me ask it again. How many of you have fireplaces in your home? Now raise your hand. Oh, lots of you have fires in your living room. But you say, you don't understand, Tom. That fireplace is made out of brick and glass and metal, and I have pokers to keep everything in there, and I make sure that never will that fireplace get out of there. The fireplace is the place of warmth and happiness and light. That's what sex is to a marriage. It's not the main course. It's the topping. It's the final follow-through of love and tenderness. It's to give yourself. My honeymoon night, I was just laying there with my wife, and I thought, what a neat institution is sex. I don't just have to write a love note. I just don't have to say this. I can actually, in sex, it can be like guiding a big fighter that you've got this big, enormous machine, but you can guide it with just a fingertip control. That I can have all of these emotions of love to my wife, and yet I can just, with fingertips, make her feel a certain way. God was so wise to give sex. But if I let it premaritally get out of where it's supposed to be, what happens to a house when it gets out of where it's supposed to be? It'll burn the whole thing down, and you ain't got nothing but a fireplace sticking up. And that's what happens to sex. You burn your whole life down and you've got nothing left but a sex drive. What you get if you start building it on immorality is you get what's called the law of diminishing returns. You know what that is? Here's the way that the sexual gradation goes. Hand to hand. First time you hold your mate's hand, it's about 600 volts. Oh man. But after a while, it just kind of gets kind of sweaty, kind of clammy. And so you've got to go hand to shoulder. Oh, there it is. Then you go hand, after a while, your arm gets dead, and so you go hand to waist. That's a little bit better. And then you know what you do? You go face to face. Touch your face. That's a little bit better. And then after a while, that gets old, believe it or not, you go hand to head. To put your hand on a woman's head is a lot more sensual than touching her face. If a guy pats my wife's face, that's one thing. If he touches her head, see, I've got to kill him. That's the code of the hills. You don't touch my wife's head. And then after a while, you go body to body. Those full body hugs. And then you go mouth to face. Then you go mouth to mouth. Then you go hand to body. Then you go body to body. That is true. I don't care whether you're an Eskimo or a pygmy or you're in Dallas, because that's the way God gears you. And if you build your marriage like this, you're going to keep getting the law of diminishing returns that you've got to get your fix. And after a while, you're not going to relate to any other anymore. You're just going to get passionate. You're just going to get in heat. And you can't build a relationship on that. That's why God loves us and tells us not to do this, is you can't build a marriage on it. Good way to look at this. Just imagine, and I'll close. I got two circles. Girl, guy. The greatest need of a girl, the way she spells love, is tenderness. The way a guy spells love is respect. At some point in your dating relationship, you're going to meet a person that gives you tenderness, and the guy gives you tenderness and the girl gives you respect. And it's going to feel so good that you're going to get married. And the assumption of that marriage is they're always going to be respectful and tender. They'll always be that way. And that's an okay assumption. If that person in the dating relationship was treating you with respect and tenderness because of the nature of God, the Word of God, the example of Jesus, the unction of the Holy Spirit, and the example of the body of Christ, those are steel things of virtue and character, and they never go away. And when you get married, you're going to have times that you don't feel like it, but that holy guy is still going to treat you that way because he fears God. And that woman is still going to be submissive and kind and tender because she fears God. And that's a good assumption. But if you get to dating and build a relationship and you don't communicate and you go to the easy fix of sexuality and sensuality that looks just like passion, that looks just like love when you're doing it. It looks like love. You can't build a marriage on that. It will give way because at some point in your marriage, sex very shortly is going to be not just an act of passion, it's going to be an act of devotion and love. It's going to be a tangible commitment that you make to that person. And if you don't have the holiness of God, if you don't have love and devotion, you're not going to feel like doing it. So now what happens is the couple draws apart. He doesn't give her tenderness, she doesn't give him respect, and they start manipulating each other. She cuts him off sexually, he cuts her off in tenderness. They get mean, they get mad, they grow further apart, and then you know what happens? They start going outside the marriage to get tenderness. He goes outside the marriage to get respect. She goes into a bunch of civic duties. She goes back to her mama. She goes to her buddies. She goes and starts a new career. She goes back to school. Any and all of those things can be good, but when they're used as a substitute for the mate, what's worse is that someday she's going to go to eat at Chili's, and there's going to be a guy across the booth that's going to say, "Hiya." And that just felt so good to see a guy do that. "Hiya." And she's going to go, "Hiya" back. And he's going to say, "You eat here often?" And he just had such a lilt in his voice. He was so sweet. He was so kind. So she says, "Yeah." And he says, "When do you come in here?" And she looks at her ring. She goes, "Oh, Tuesdays." "Why?" "Oh, just wondering. Maybe I'll see you." Maybe so. She knew she shouldn't have said that, but that felt so good. And that next Tuesday, she fixes herself a little bit better. Husband says, "What are you getting ready for?" "Oh, I don't know, just want to be ready." And you see what happens? She's getting a fix. This guy is pimping tenderness. And that's the way you have an affair. The guy over here, he doesn't get respect, so what does he do? He hangs out with his buddies all the time. He's got to play softball 3 nights a week. He's got to start unbuttoning his shirt down to his navel and looking like one of those idiots, you know, that's always trying to recapture his youth. Because that's the way. Now he becomes a workaholic. Now he's got to have all of these little trinkets to show that he's a man until someday he goes to Chili's and there's a girl there and you got it happening again. I'm done. Y'all see a 3,000-year-old document. As we close, some of you may be sitting here saying, "Man, have I blown it." I had one guy after this walk up and he said, "My mother wrote you." No. The wonderful thing is, none of us are like we should be, and that's, people, why you have in Christianity a fellow who died upon a cross that was the very Son of God. To die for what we could not do, to convert us, to give us the desire to do what we ought. That is Christianity. And no matter how foul you may have been, Jesus Christ can wash you clean. If you knew about me what God knows about me, you wouldn't come. But if I knew about you what God knew, we wouldn't let you in. So it's all the same. True story. One time they baptized one of the presidents of Texas, Sam Houston. Nasty fella. And they said to him, "Sam, your sins are washed away." Sam said, "God help the fish." And that's the way a lot of us feel, isn't it?